The World This Week. I'm Doug Poling, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. It was a week in which a glimmer of hope developed for an end to the civil strife in Lebanon. Fighting continued in Angola, and Secretary of State Henry Kissinger worked on both sides of detente in Moscow and Madrid. There were several developments in Lebanon, more killings, another ceasefire, and a long, fruitless series of ceasefires. But this time there is a feeling that a solution may be at hand, as Mike Lee reports from Beirut.
The week began with Lebanese Prime Minister Rashid Karami resigning amid widespread fighting and ended with his reinstatement amid widespread hopes that a new Syrian peace plan would hold. In between Karami's decisions came the most fierce fighting of the war and the most serious threats to overall Mideast peace. Leftist forces overran the Christian town of Damour, south of Beirut, killing at least 50 people and sending thousands fleeing for their lives. In apparent retaliation for the Damour incident, right-wing phalanges closed in on the Muslim slum of Karantina, killing at least 35 people, forcing some 4,000 from their homes. But by week's end, the ceasefire seems to be holding, despite some sporadic shooting. Overall, there seems to be a stronger optimism than in ceasefires past, mainly because of the Syrian mediation role. All sides have agreed to talk, but it will take a lot of talking to break down the barriers that have left 9,000 dead, 20,000 wounded, and countless without homes. Mike Lee, CBS News, Beirut.
Secretary of State Kissinger arrived home Sunday. Late in the afternoon, he met with President Ford for a briefing on the secretary's dealings in Moscow, Brussels, and Madrid. Bernard Kelb has a report.
He spent 3 days in Moscow in an effort to advance a relaxation of tensions. That was one side of detente. He then flew to NATO headquarters in Brussels, then to Madrid in an effort to reinforce the defenses of Europe in the event East-West relaxation did not survive. That was the other side of detente. In the Soviet capital, the emphasis was on trying to reach a breakthrough on the deadlock blocking a new agreement on limiting nuclear weapons. There was progress, but the maximum hope of a breakthrough was not achieved. Still, Kissinger and his party seemed genuinely pleased by what was characterized as the workmanlike serious effort to solve their nuclear problems. The Russians came up with a proposal, U.S. officials said, that would modestly reduce the nuclear weapons ceiling of 2,400 set at Vladivostok in 1974. The reduction tied in with a search for a solution to the controversies over how to deal with the American cruise missile and the Soviet backfire bomber. After Moscow, Brussels, and NATO to report on the negotiations with the Russians, then on to non-NATO Madrid, where Kissinger signed a treaty with the Spanish government. It's part of a five-year package under which, assuming Congress nods in agreement, which is expected, the U.S. keeps its four bases in Spain, and Spain gets more than $1 billion in military and economic credits and grants. Altogether, a little shoring up of Western defenses along the southern flank of NATO in a week that saw Kissinger work indefatigably on both sides of the fence of detente. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, Madrid.
Among the topics discussed in Moscow by Kissinger and Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev was Angola. According to reports, the Russians, unlike the United States, regard the Angola fighting as a war of liberation and outside the workings of detente. In the meantime, the popular movement for the liberation of Angola, which is supported by Soviet weapons as well as Cuban soldiers, appears to have the upper hand in the war. Pro-Western units are hoping for a deadlock in the fighting so that a political settlement can be negotiated. Last Monday evening, the nation listened as President Ford gave his State of the Union message, presented to a joint session of Congress and broadcast live to the country. The president characterized the condition of America with these words.
Just a year ago, I reported that the State of the Union was not good. Tonight, I report that the state of our union is better, in many ways, a lot better, but still not good enough.
The president called for a new realism in America. He urged the people to recognize that the resources of the federal government are limited. He asked that Congress not approve any new federal programs, and he wants the budget held at $394.2 billion, only about 5% higher than the budget for the current fiscal year. Mr. Ford wants a little more money spent for defense and less for social welfare programs. 2 days later, in his economic message, the president talked about the unemployment problem. He made it clear he does not think the federal government should try to solve the problem by itself.
I don't believe that the federal government should, out of the federal treasury, coming from the federal taxpayers, provide a job for every individual. It seems to me that the better approach is to create an economic environment so that the private sector provides jobs for those who want to work. And that's the basis of my proposal in the budget and in the economic message.
But the Democrats had a different view. Wednesday night, Senator Edmund Muskie of Maine went on the air to deliver the Democratic response to President Ford's programs. Unemployment is clearly a major issue for this election year.
The president's budget is designed to keep unemployment over 7% for another year and more. To keep 7 million Americans unemployed at this time, a year from now. Most economists believe that the administration's policies are followed. Unemployment will not fall below 7% in this decade.
But Muskie, the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, said the Democrats acknowledge that problems cannot be forced to go away just by throwing federal dollars at them. The week saw the list of declared candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination drop by one. It's still crowded with 10 men officially trying for the party nod. The 11th, former North Carolina Governor Terry Sanford, announced he is dropping out, Sanford saying he doesn't think he can win. Perhaps the most interesting political development of the week occurred in Iowa. Democrats met in party caucuses, the first of several before convention delegates are selected. Jimmy Carter, the former governor of Georgia, got the highest percentage of any candidate, 27%. Senator Birch Bayh of Indiana came in second with 13%. However, 37% of the Iowa delegates were uncommitted. There was another precinct caucus late in the week in Mississippi. Final results may not be in for some time, but early results showed Governor George Wallace of Alabama with about 41%. Carter was in second place with about 18%. The House Intelligence Committee this past week approved its draft report on the nation's intelligence gathering apparatus. Most of what it had to say was not new. One of the more interesting findings was a report of how much money is spent to gather information. About $10.5 billion, says the House panel. Aviation history was made this week with the start of commercial flights by the Concorde SST, the British-French joint venture into supersonic transport. Two planes took off Wednesday, one from London, bound for the Persian Gulf state of Bahrain, the other from Paris to Rio. The planes achieved speeds of twice the speed of sound, or Mach 2. 2 hours was cut off the regular flying time to Bahrain. The flight from Paris to Rio was cut by 4.5 hours. As for the future regarding SST landings in the United States, that's a matter still being considered by Transportation Secretary William Coleman. Among the arguments against the SST are fears over damage to the Earth's ozone layer and, closer to the ground, concern over excessive jet noise. Upon the plane's takeoff from London's Heathrow Airport, an anti-noise group less than a mile from the runway in the village of Stanwell Moor monitored the sound. The chairman of the Aircraft Noise Council, Jeffrey Holmes, didn't like what he heard.
Well, it's 134 PNDB here. It means it's above the threshold of pain, and this could harm people's hearing if there were sufficient flights today.
And that's The World This Week, produced by Harry Poloshin. I'm Doug Poling, CBS News.